Sage, he said, looking uncomfortable. A minute later, Claire came walking over with Lieutenant Gramwell carrying her bag. Sage helped her friend mount her horse, as Luke shook his father's hand goodbye. I imagine Alex will send dispatches to both Tenegal and Vinova now, Sage said quietly. I'll send my reports to you, and you can forward them to the Queen. It will take longer, but I don't dare send her anything but progress reports. Of course, Claire said, taking the reins and looking quite comfortable sitting astride, despite its unladylike position. I just hope you have something to actually say next time. Sage scowled. I did plenty of work translating, more than you. Well, it's not as if you have anyone else to write to, Claire said, then blushed. I'm sorry, Sage. I didn't mean it that way. I know, Sage said. She didn't regret coming, and she'd never considered abandoning her mission for the Queen. But if she wasn't here, Alex would be writing to her. Ironically, Sage would be communicating with him more than she did now in camp. The ambassador had mounted and was leading the small retinue out of the camp. Claire looked down at Sage one last time. Bas Medari, she said, using the Kazmuni phrase of greeting and farewell. Bas Medari, Sage replied. When the party had disappeared up the trail into the trees, Sage turned back, thinking to skip morning training and recover from staying up so late with Claire, sorting out the Kazmuni words and phrases, and arguing over which syllables to emphasize in pronunciation. Sage was lifting the flap on her tent when she realized the assembled Norsari didn't sound like they were exercising. Curious, she headed for the open area they normally gathered on. The men were standing at attention as Kasik called out names. When the lieutenant finished, Alex stepped forward.
Those called are excused from duties today and will report to the quartermaster for supplies. We leave at midnight.
A ripple of surprise went through the ranks. Patrols had always been made by established platoons, but the men selected had been drawn from all four. They'd also always left at dawn, so this was either a rush or something that required the cover of darkness. Or both. Had the ambassador given the Norsari a special mission? Alex stepped back.
Carry on,
he told Kasik, who took charge. The designated soldiers fell out of formation and headed for the supply tents. Prince Nicholas folded his arms and pouted.
I never get picked.
Sage waited until nearly noon before seeking out Henry, one of the squires whose name had been called. He was in his open tent, sorting his gear, while his tentmate, the prince, sulked from where he sat mending a tear in his tunic.
Hello, Henry, Sage called as she approached. I heard you won't be coming today.
The squire had eagerly joined the prince's lessons with her, though it was probably less for learning and more to avoid cleaning out the horse pen in the afternoons. Henry looked up. He was the scrawniest of the four squires, about her height and weight, and she was often paired with him in sparring.
Good morning, Mistress Sage. I was just telling His Highness that these patrols are less fun than he thinks.
He doesn't take into account how his being gone adds to my workload, said Nicholas peevishly. I've never been on one, Sage replied, so I can't say.
She surveyed the issued gear laid out on Henry's bedroll.
What have you got there? She asked,
pointing to a shapeless bundle. Henry held up a long, wide strip of cloth.
I'm to make this into some kind of headscarf, supposed to cover my face, too.
He glanced at the prince.
But someone is using my needle and thread at the moment. Hold your horses, the prince snapped. If you're taking the kit with you, I need to do this now. Or you could just borrow Harold and Elliot's, said Henry. Harold's using it to make his own headscarf.
Henry rolled his eyes at Sage.
Have you ever tried to argue with the prince?
Only every afternoon, she replied.
She would have offered her own mending kit, But if the two squires were down to only one needle between them, it didn't bode well for getting hers back.
Do you know where you're going?
No one ever thinks to tell the squires, but they gave everyone an extra canteen, and one of these.
Henry held up a water sling, which was basically a large water skin that was carried across the back. Water was plentiful in this area, so the need to carry extra water could only mean one thing. They were going into the desert. Into Kasmin. Chapter 36. Sneaking into the company was easier than Sage had expected. Henry had been agreeable to letting her go in his place once he realized it meant he could spend several days skipping duties and catching up on sleep. Rather than her usual belted tunic and hose, Sage wore a pair of torn, discarded trousers that had just enough serviceable fabric left to tailor into something that fit her small frame. The new breeches, coupled with the loose squire's tunic, hid her shape rather well. She worried about standing out with the scarf wrapped around her head. But the night was cold and windy, and half the men assembled wore theirs already. The trickiest moment came before they left. Sage was standing in her tent, loading Henry's borrowed pack, when Alex came to see her. Fortunately, he didn't just walk in like he had that first night.
Sage?
He'd called from just outside the tent flap.
Are you dressed?
Yes, she said without thinking, because she was dressed. Then she'd nearly shouted, No, wait, don't come in. The shadow of his hand dropped.
I just wanted to say goodbye.
Sage crept to the entrance. Where are you going?
Just on a training patrol.
He sounded tense and distracted.
It will be a longer one.
He'd never bothered to say goodbye before. She didn't know how to respond. Be safe, she finally said. His fingers pressed against the canvas.
I love you,
he said quietly. Sage reached out to touch the same spot, but he moved his hand. I love you too. She never knew if he heard her. They forded the river and headed downstream about a mile before Alex made everyone pause and drink from their canteens before refilling them. Then he led them south, away from the water, for another couple miles until they came to where the trees ended and the sands began. By the light of the half-moon, the dunes looked black and white, the edges of the shadows sharp and distinct. Alex turned to face the men behind him. Sage ducked behind a soldier, not wanting to chance his noticing her.
Everyone will remain vigilant and alert, he said. If you see any sign of people, report it immediately. The area is uninhabited, but always be prepared to defend yourselves.
He nodded to Lieutenant Gramwell beside him, pulled his headscarf up to protect against the sand, and turned and walked into the desert without another word. No one spoke for the first few hours, just focused on walking in the shifting sands. By sunrise, Sage could barely tell any of the Norsari apart. They were so coated in dust and grit. Alex led them south, or at least she thought it was south, for an indeterminate distance, then turned southeast. She wondered if Alex actually knew where he was going. She certainly couldn't see any landmarks. The squires were generally ignored, except when the group stopped to rest, and they passed out provisions and refilled canteens from the mules, large bags of water carried by some of the bigger men. By mid-afternoon, when they stopped to pitch tents and rest through the hottest hours of the day, Sage was feeling fairly confident she'd be able to keep up this ruse, especially if everyone always kept their heads wrapped. Complications arose on the first night. They'd stopped again at sunset to rest and wait for the moon to rise so they could see where they were going. She was bedding down in the small tent she shared with Harold, the other squire, when she caught a glimpse of red-gold hair on the head next to hers. Knowing exactly who she'd find, Sage tore the scarf away from his head.
Highness, she hissed. What in the spirit's name are you doing here?
Like you can talk.
The prince wore a sleepy grin as he rolled onto his back.
Let's just say I was inspired by my admirable tutor.
You can't be here, she whispered furiously. Do you have any idea what Captain Quinn will do when he finds out?
You didn't seem worried about the consequences.
That's because I have no intention of getting caught.
Sage punched him on the shoulder, hard.
Ow! Neither do I.
Nicholas rubbed the spot she'd hit.
Besides, what can he do? Confine us both to the camp? How is that any different from the last 6 weeks?
He can do a lot more than that.
Then don't get caught.
Nicholas shrugged and rolled to his side again, facing away from her. If only it were that easy. Sage smacked his head for good measure and threw his scarf back at him.
You'd better wear this even in your dreams.
Chapter 37 Alex had two objectives in the desert, besides not dying. The first was to find Kazmuni and ascertain what they were doing. Estimates from last year's intrusion were approximately 100, so he brought 40 men, hand-picked from each platoon, plus Lieutenant Gramwell and two squires, figuring they could handle 2-to-1 odds fairly well. If the Kazmuni numbered significantly more, it was better if none of the Damorans survived. In the event the Norsari encountered no one, Alex's backup plan was to have the first few miles into the desert charted out when they returned. Then at least he'd be able to present Colonel Trasden with something tangible. The desert had disturbingly little to map, however. There were no rock formations or permanent hills among the rolling dunes. If Alex hadn't had years of practice orienting himself by the sun and stars, the Norsari would have been completely lost by the first night. On the second morning, Alex led the group west, intending to have completed a wide triangle when he returned. He was doubly glad he'd chosen to travel on foot. Horses would have needed to drink the extra water they could have carried, and the deep sands might have caused them injury. There were no signs of Kazmuni. The waning crescent moon rose later every night, giving them less light each time. He told Kasich to expect his return after the new moon, but unless the Norsari found water soon, they'd have to head back early. Alex tried to tell himself the mission wasn't a complete loss. Just the experience of traversing the sand and learning how easy it was to become disoriented and dehydrated was valuable. None of the men along would ever underestimate the desert. The wind picked up on the third morning, and visibility was so bad, Alex ordered everyone to stay put until the hottest part of the day was over, a move that also conserved water. Weeks of sleepless nights were taking their toll on him too, but the heat made sleeping damn near impossible. He only managed an hour or two before nightmares put an end to the attempt. Instead, he lay in his sweltering tent, thinking. When they broke camp, he would lead the Norsari northeast. They'd be back at the river in 2 days, with nothing to show for it. He needed to see her. Kasich would make Sage's protection a priority. Alex had no doubt of that. Even so, her presence at the camp always tugged at him like a rope under strain, trying to drag him back to make sure she was all right. Now he wondered if he'd unconsciously played it safe in the last few weeks, not wanting to risk having to make the choice he always faced in his dreams. If so, he deserved his failure. He should have told her, should have tried to explain, but doing so admitted he was unfit for duty. As long as he never said it out loud, he could hold on to the hope that it wasn't true. Did it even matter anymore? He was about to lose his command. There was so much sand in the air that the time of day was impossible to tell. Around sunset, the Norsari headed back toward the Kaz River, marching in the ever-deepening gloom. Every 100 yards or so, Alex stopped to orient himself by the northern wheel. Sometimes it took a full minute to find the right stars. The dust was so thick. Alex gave up and ordered the men to stop again and set up camp sometime around midnight. He was standing on the windward side, trying to decide if he wanted more guards on the perimeter, when he heard it. A voice carried on the wind, speaking a language he didn't recognize. He grabbed Lieutenant Gramwell.
"Do you hear that?"
Graham listened for a few seconds, then nodded.
"Doesn't sound like DeMorin. Two voices, at least."
"Keep setting up, but post more sentries. I'm taking a squad to investigate."
"Do you want a big tent up?"
The two-man tents they carried were designed to be combined into larger ones. The unspoken question was whether any guests Alex returned with would be held there. Alex nodded.
"Make one out of four."
With so many sentries posted, there would be less need for shelter among the men. Gramwell saluted smartly, but added,
"Don't get lost."
Alex returned the salute. Fear of getting lost was first in his mind, too. With the wind, tracks in the sand disappeared in a matter of minutes. He selected and briefed eight men, then signaled for them to maintain silence, though the wind appeared to be in their favor for carrying sound. Alex counted his paces, keeping one eye on the wheel to the north. After about a quarter hour, the voices stopped for a few minutes, but then were heard again, much louder this time, definitely not speaking DeMorin. Alex checked his weapon's readiness and headed toward the sound. A voice suddenly called out. Alex stopped and looked around, catching the faint flicker of a light about 30 yards away.
"Uncover the lamp,"
he whispered to the man next to him, who promptly lifted the shutter on the lantern he carried.
"Wave it around."
At the signal, two shapes came running toward them, at least as much as men could run in the wind and sand. Alex kept his hand on his sword, but didn't draw it.
"Wulan Sperta,"
the man without a lantern said, reaching out to clasp arms with one of the Norsari. Too late, he and his companion realized they were not among friends. 9 against 2 wasn't a fair fight, but Alex didn't care. The crescent moon was barely visible through the haze when Alex returned.
"Set a level 5 perimeter," he told Gramwell.
It meant fewer men to guard the captives, but the pair had obviously been searching for lost companions. They'd come running toward the DeMorins without hesitation, so it was safe to assume at least 10 more Kazmuni were still out there. The combined tent Graham had set up was large enough to keep a clear space around the prisoners. Alex waited for the men to be tied up. He had no way of communicating with them, and both Kazmuni looked as exhausted as he felt. Alex guessed they'd been wandering alone for a long time. Once the men were secure to his satisfaction, he left the tent. Both squires were standing outside, watching from a safe distance. The pair had avoided him for the past few days, which wasn't unusual under normal circumstances. All the boys were a little afraid of him, even the prince. But curiosity had apparently gotten the better of their fear this time. He'd had just as much awe for captains when he was their age. Officers always seemed so sure of themselves. Now he knew commanders were stumbling through their duties as much as any squire, trying not to fail or get somebody killed. Alex suddenly envied the boys. Their lives and duties were so much simpler. The prisoners would be impossible to hide from them. Alex figured it was better to let the boys see more rather than let their imagination add details where they had none. He also knew what it was like to be in their boots, desperate to see one of their enemies for the first time, under safe conditions. Alex smiled a little.
"Get these men some water and camp biscuits," he called, jerking a thumb over his shoulder.
For a few seconds, he considered supervising the encounter, but decided against it. The squires were old enough to handle themselves, and they needed the confidence boost of their captain's trust. Also, he needed a nap.
Chapter 38.
Sage entered the tent with quaking knees. Nicholas slipped in behind her, and the soldier on guard left to wait outside. Even the large tent couldn't contain the five of them comfortably. Undoubtedly, the man thought the squires were fine alone with two restrained and exhausted men. The Kazmuni sat back to back, resting bound wrists on their legs, which were stretched out with ankles also bound. Judging from the creases in their short, robe-like shirts, they'd been wearing belts, but Alex must have taken them. Sage estimated the age of the man facing her to be about 30. A long white scar ran across the deeply tanned skin of his forehead, and black stubble of about 4 days' growth covered his face and neck. His hazel eyes were bright with intelligence as he studied her. She pushed her headscarf back and tugged it away to let him take in every detail of her face and hair. He sniffed a little, but said nothing. Sage took a deep breath.
"Bas Medari," she said.
The man's eyes widened. Too late, she realized how ironic it was to wish a captured man good fortune. But then the man bowed his head slightly and replied, "Bas Medar." He made it sound like one word, which could be the difference between spoken and written Kazmuni, or 300 years of language evolving. Or he had a sheepherder's accent or something. But he understood her. Nicholas remained silent as she'd instructed. "After water has been shared and goodwill established," said every document she'd studied, "then shall negotiations begin." Sage reached under her tunic and pulled out a small chalice, counting on its formality to distinguish it from anything the man might have already received. Turning to Nicholas, she gestured for him to fill it from his canteen. When he was done, she pivoted back to the prisoner and took a slow, deliberate sip, knowing the Kazmuni was watching her every move. Then she knelt and offered the cup to him. After a long, silent moment, during which Sage's courage nearly failed her, the man licked his lips and held up his bound hands to accept the chalice. He grasped it awkwardly, but brought it to his mouth and drank all the water down. Sage motioned for Nicholas to fill it again, which he did. This time, the Kazmuni took a deliberate sip and offered it back to the prince.
"Drink it," she whispered,
her voice barely carrying above the wind outside.
"I'm not stupid,"
he muttered, taking it and doing as she said. The Kazmuni tilted his head toward his companion behind him, who watched everything over his shoulder. Nicholas rushed to fill the cup for him.
"Pala Wolsea," the man before her said. "I thank you."
"Pala Wolin Bas," Sage replied. "I am well thanked."
She sat back on her heels and put her hand on her chest.
"Sage Fowler."
"Sage Fowler," he said gravely,
then gestured to himself.
"Deret Yamon."
He tipped his head to the man behind him, who had a green scarf still over his head.
"Malaman Dar."
She repeated the names and he nodded. "So far so good."
"Say Basa Tribanda?" she asked. "Are you well accommodated?" At least that's what she hoped, she said.
Derrett's eyebrows shot up, the white scar disappearing into the wrinkles on his forehead, and a hint of a smile tugged at the corner of his mouth. He raised his hands.
"Palin pole basa hastinan."
She struggled to pick out and understand his words. Palin meant my or mine. Basa was good or well. Derrett was showing her his hands, so pole likely referred to them. She filed the word in her mind and searched for anything that sounded like hastinan and found hastin, an animal pen. "My hands are well confined." Derrett had a sense of humor. He would need it, and patience, if they were to understand each other.
"You lose your friends in the sands?" she asked.
He shook his head.
"No,
in the Sera.
Sera? She asked. It was a word she didn't know.
Derrett blew air out of his mouth in imitation of the wind raging outside the tent.
Ah, wind.
He was distinguishing that the storm had separated him from his companions rather than the sand, which was interesting. Sage was sure she would muddle conjugation, so she stuck to simple sentences.
Where travel you?
The Kazmuni considered the question for several seconds, then answered,
North.
Travel you in Demora?
Derrett's expression hardened.
No, I stay in my own country.
His point was obvious, and Sage couldn't blame him for being angry. She wanted to ask more, but her time was running out. Sage gestured to Nicholas.
Give them the food.
The prince moved forward and gave them each a dry biscuit. Derrett chewed his slowly, screwing up his face, plainly not impressed with the taste. When both he and Malamin had finished, Sage and Nicholas gave them more water, this time from their canteens. As they prepared to leave, Sage paused to face Derrett.
Speak nothing, she told him,
putting her finger to her lips. Derrett brought his eyebrows together and frowned, but she ducked out of the tent before he could speak. Chapter 39. The wind was finally dying down, thank the spirit. Alex broke camp in the morning, wanting to get as far from where they'd found the Kazmuni as possible. By sunset, the storm of sand had abated, leaving the land completely quiet, other than the sounds of the marching Norsari. The silence was unnerving, after going so long with the constant whistle of the wind. Alex walked near the front, close to the captives, hoping to catch their reaction if they saw or heard something. The scarred one kept looking around behind him at the column of men, counting and assessing, no doubt. Alex would have done the same. What he'd done nagged at him. Alex had fully expected to take prisoners when the Kazmuni ventured back into Demora, and the Norsari would have been justified in doing so. But these men had been taken from their own land. It wasn't right. Alex needed answers, though, and not just for Colonel Trasden's arrival. With so much of the army tied up in Tasmet, a force could march all the way to Tenegal virtually unchecked. If the Kazmuni were working with the Khimisar, it could be the end of Demora. How was he going to talk to these men? Sage would be able to read the silent Kazmuni like a book. Languages were one of her many strengths, too. If anyone could communicate with them, it was her. That meant bringing her into the circle of information, which, until now, had been him and Ash. And Alex welcomed her insight more than anyone else's. He could also finally include his officers. It was no longer a secret he had to carry alone. Now that he had these men, however, things were also bound to get more dangerous. When Alex sent his report to the king, he would try to convince Sage to be the courier. The royal family trusted her, and it was important enough that she wasn't likely to refuse. Maybe he should send the prince as well. Uncle Raymond wanted the boy to grow up, but at some point, the risk was too great. They walked through the day and into the night, until the moon rose. With its light, he felt safe enough to set up camp, and as the men had been walking for almost 20 hours straight, rest was imperative. Alex couldn't be sure of his location, but he suspected he had only another 30 or 40 miles to the river. Almost there. Chapter 40. Sunrise wasn't for another hour, and Sage swayed with weariness, but she had to talk to the Kazmuni while most of the Norsari were asleep or otherwise occupied. Nicholas himself was snoring inside their low tent. She worried how she would get the man on guard away, but the Kazmuni were alone in the tent, both asleep with their hands and feet bound.
Derrett, she whispered, nudging his shoulder gently.
Derrett opened his eyes, and blinked a few times.
Sish Faller?
Yes, she answered in Kazmuni, pulling her scarf under her chin. Water? He nodded, and she gave him a sip from her canteen. Derrett sat up on his elbow.
Why are you here?
He asked.
Here with you, or here in Kazmun?
Derrett smiled ironically.
Both.
Only desperation or orders could have driven Alex to be so reckless, but neither explanation reflected well on Demora.
I know not why in Kazmun, she said. I wish help for you, but you must first speak answers.
He studied her for a moment.
Where did you learn Kazmuni speech?
I learn words from old treaties, she answered. Is it well?
Derrett's eyes sparkled with amusement.
You speak like a child.
Sage grinned.
Understanding is most important.
Yes.
The humorous expression vanished.
What are your questions?
Sage took a deep breath.
Why Kazmuni come in Demora last year?
We did not.
We see proof, she insisted. Kazmuni come and go 10 months past.
Close to here?
She nodded, and he shook his head.
Impossible. The desert does not allow it.
Just as the trade agreements had said.
How know I this is truth? She pressed.
Derrett's lips twisted up in a half-smile.
Try to cross the sand after the solstice, and you will see for yourself.
The extra words in his answer overwhelmed her, and it took him repeating them twice for her to understand. Sage glanced around nervously. A guard could come in at any moment.
Then who come? Kimisar? Are you allies?
A look of disgust crossed Derrett's face.
Zara will grow in the desert before Kazmun allies with Kimisara.
Zara had been something much traded in the documents. Sage's best guess was that it was a type of grain.
Can you prove? She asked. If yes, I make my friends give you freedom.
It was a bold offer she wasn't likely to be able to honor, but she made it anyway.
I have friends who can take my freedom.
He leaned forward.
Many more friends than you have here.
Derrett was likely part of a patrol sent from a larger group, meaning that group was probably days away, so that was a bluff, at least for now. But Sage played along.
What do you when free? She asked.
He shrugged.
Report to my king. He has interest in your country. That is why we visit the border.
To spy?
It was becoming easier to understand him, partly because he spoke so she could tell his carefully chosen words apart.
To assess manners. Not so nice, I think.
Sage's mind raced. If the desert was impassable after the solstice, Derrett didn't have much time to get back.
Your friends wait for your return? She asked.
Derrett must have been thinking along the same lines.
In several days. After that I will not be able to meet or follow them.
He stopped suddenly, seeming to realize he'd admitted he did not expect a rescue.
They abandon you if late?
The Kazmuni swallowed and nodded.
Yes. They must return. The springs are fading.
Until next year, she said, not making it a question that his friends would come back for him.
Derrett looked her in the eye.
Yes, until next year.
The Norsari coming into Kazmun like this was tantamount to an act of war. Taking these men captive only made it worse. Sage had to undo the damage before Demora had a real invasion on its hands. She had to tell someone what she knew, that the Kazmuni hadn't scouted into Demora and had no intention of invading. Holding these men now risked provoking the very war Alex was trying to prevent. Sage rose to her feet, intending to go straight to Alex, but the sudden vision of trying to explain everything stopped her cold. He wouldn't listen. Not only had she spoken to the Kazmuni, she'd gone behind his back for weeks, essentially spied against him. But that would all be eclipsed by the fact that she was here, now. Alex would be so furious she wouldn't get 10 words out. Within hours of returning to camp, she'd be on her way back to Tenegal. Going through Lieutenant Gramwell, or waiting until she could plead her case to Kasich, wouldn't help. At least, not in time. Darrett watched as she paced, silently arguing with herself. The Kazmuni king was approaching Demora cautiously, testing their manners, as Darrett said. Sage had no doubt they'd be back next year. Whether they crossed the desert with an angry army, or with the intention to talk, depended on the release of these men. If they were to be freed, she would have to do it. Alone. Sage sank to her knees in front of Darrett.
"Time is little," she said. "If I give you freedom, will you speak well of Demora?"
Darrett looked skeptical.
"Is that in your power, Sage Faller? I have watched you, and you are lowest among these men."
"I act without permission."
He narrowed his eyes in suspicion.
"Why would you do this?"
"This is all bad understanding," she said. "I repair mistake."
Darrett struggled to sit up straight.
"It will be trouble for you."
Alex's anger didn't frighten her nearly as much as the consequences of holding these men too long. Her actions would go all the way to the king himself, but at least he'd listen, especially with the queen on her side. Sage set her jaw.
"I am more than you see."
"That I believe,"
Darrett said dryly. Sage stood again and dusted sand off her trousers. With the new moon coming, tonight would have several dark hours. She had to start planning.
"I must go," she said, pulling her headscarf around her face, leaving only her eyes exposed.
He reached up for her hand with his bound ones.
"Good fortune, Sage Faller."
She squeezed his fingers back, trying to ignore the sick feeling in her stomach. What she planned to do bordered on treason.
"Be ready."
Sage ducked out of the tent and slammed full force into Alex. Chapter 41. Sage stumbled backward, but Alex caught her arm before she was fully off her feet.
"Easy, kid,"
he said, pulling her upright. When she was steady, he let her go. Sage cowered away from him, her mind scrambling for traction. Henry usually avoided Alex's attention, but he would have said something.
"Sorry, sir,"
she rasped, trying to imitate the way the squire's voice had begun to crack and break.
"No harm."
Alex sounded tired.
"Henry, isn't it?"
She nodded, staring at the ground. Whatever she did, she could not let him see her eyes. Thank the spirit, it was still fairly dark.
"What were you doing in there, Henry?"
Alex asked sternly, though he sounded slightly amused. Sage raised the canteen so he could see it.
"Giving them water," she squeaked.
"Good initiative."
He patted her shoulder and moved around her to the tent, where Darrett and Malamin lay. Sage edged away as Alex lifted the flap to look inside.
"Already asleep," he said. "They'll need it. We're marching through the night again tonight. I want to get to the river by noon tomorrow."
Sage had managed to take several steps, trying to look like a boy who really didn't want to be there right now. Alex dropped the fabric and turned away.
"Get some rest, kid."
Then he was gone. Sage was still shaking when she reached her low tent and crawled in beside Nicholas. That had been too close, but now she knew it had to be tonight. She nudged the prince.
"Harold, wake up."
Nicholas grunted and rolled away. She punched his shoulder until he rolled back.
"What do you want, Henry?"
he groaned.
"I need your help."
The Norsari broke camp an hour before dusk,
Alex giving all the men a chance to sleep several hours between sentry rotations. Sage and Nicholas kept their backs to most of the activity as they packed tents, surreptitiously pouring lamp oil on the fabric before rolling it up. They couldn't risk their fire being put out before it provided the distraction they needed. Alex stayed near the prisoners while they marched, meaning she and Nicholas would have to wait until the group stopped to rest and he moved away from them. Sage also kept an eye on the bundle that contained the weapons Derrett and Malamin had been carrying when they were captured. If she could get them to the Kazmuni, she would. But it was a secondary goal. The wind picked up, bringing a thick bank of clouds that completely covered the sky. Alex tied a strip of cloth to the top of a spear and used it to orient them, as the wind came reliably from the west. Even so, the pace was almost as slow as it had been during the sandstorm. Maybe it was her tenseness or her inability to see the stars, but Sage began to feel like they were never going to stop, that Alex would push the men straight through the night without a break. How was Nicholas to start the fire if the gear wasn't in a pile? She wasn't willing to light up a pack if someone was wearing it, though she had to admit it would be quite the diversion. The man in front of her stopped, and she ran into him, then was immediately crushed from behind by the prince. There were grunts and muffled thuds as everyone realized a halt had been called. No one could see anything.
20 minutes to rest, Lieutenant Gramwell called.
Finally. The squire's job now was to pass out a small ration of dried venison and fruit. Sage lit a lantern with shaking fingers and passed the flame stick to Nicholas.
Give me 15 minutes, she whispered.
He grabbed her elbow.
Are you sure you want to do this?
I have to.
Are you still with me?
Of course.
Tell Derrett I said good luck.
He turned away and disappeared into the darkness. Sage dug around in her ration bag until she found the wrapped packet she wanted. As she walked along the line, passing out handfuls, she held the open cloth between her eyes and the lantern, keeping her face shadowed. When she got to Alex, she nearly fainted when he grabbed her leg.
Is Lieutenant Gramwell back the way you came?
Yes, sir, she gasped through the scarf over her mouth.
Alex hopped up from where he was sitting.
Make sure the prisoners get a bite and some water.
He was gone before she could answer. Sage stumbled away in the opposite direction, trying not to run. She reached the group at the head of the line and raised the shutter on the lantern higher, hoping to ruin their night vision. Then she continued forward, cranking the light down again. The Norsari paid her no attention as she felt around the stack of gear she knew the Kazmuni weapons must be in, searching for the distinctive curved blades. Luck was with her, and she found them on the windward side of the pile, opposite of where men were stepping away from the small gathered circles to relieve themselves. She eased the wrapped bundle from under a bedroll and set it on the edge so it would look naturally placed if anyone found it. Then she set the lantern nearby and lowered the shutter almost completely. Derrett and Malamin were on the other side, and she made her way to them, keeping one eye on the dark shapes of the Norsari, barely distinguishable only a few yards away. The Kazmuni pair sat unmoving, and she nearly tripped over them.
Sish, Derrett whispered.
Yes, she answered. The time is here. Sage dropped to her knees and pulled a dagger from her belt with one hand and groped around for the ropes that bound him with the other. A sudden gust of wind made several Norsari groan in frustration, the sounds providing extra cover.
The spirit has blessed us. I have never seen a night so black.
His wrists free, Derrett rubbed them and stretched his arms while Sage got to work on Malamin's bonds.
You must hurry.
She shoved her ration bag and water sling at him before scooting back to slash through the ropes on their ankles. Sage unhooked the sheath from under her tunic and slid her dagger into it before holding it out to Derrett.
Your weapons are with the light, but take this also,
that Damorans will know you when you return in friendship.
The phrase about returning in friendship was one she'd seen in several documents. She hoped she said the words correctly.
Derrett's warm hand wrapped around hers for a second as he took the knife.
You do not need it?
I have another.
At her waist, the worn handle of Alex's dagger dug into her ribs. Before sneaking into the mission, she'd wrapped strips of leather around both hilts to hide their distinctive gold letters.
Derrett set his right hand on her right shoulder.
Go with fortune, Seishfaller.
All agreements shall be sealed with the clasping of shoulders, so that sides are exposed while no weapons are in hand.
Sage placed her hand on his shoulder in return.
Bas Medar, Derrett Yamon.
Chapter 42. Sage shuffled back to the circle of Norsari, hoping to draw any wandering eyes from the shadows now crawling around the stack of tents and bedrolls.
My lantern went out, she said, and my flint is back down the line. Can I borrow yours, Corporal?
Not knowing whom she was addressing, three men stood at once, patting themselves down, digging in pockets for their own flints. One was passed to her in the darkness. She took it and pretended to fumble through several unsuccessful lighting attempts. One of the soldiers nudged her.
Turn around, kid. You're in the wind.
She also didn't have anything to light, but it didn't matter. At that moment, a small bonfire went up near the end of the line. Nicholas had dropped his own lantern on the oiled tents. Men shouted and ran toward the light. Those not close enough to help stood to watch their companions pull the flaming pile of gear apart and stomp on the flames, turning their back on the desert.
Keep looking, keep looking, keep looking.
Alex strode around the crowd, giving directions. With the wind, it took a while to get things under control. Just before the fire was extinguished, he spun around and called for everyone to arm up.
We've just announced our presence. Form a perimeter. Sergeants, account for your people and report.
The last flames went out, and the air was filled with curses as men blundered about in the sudden darkness. Every second was needed for Derrett and Malamin to get as far away as possible and for the wind to cover their tracks, so Sage tried to encourage confusion in little ways. Someone asked where the Kazmuni were, and she called out that Lieutenant Gramwell had taken them. It was only a few minutes before chaos became order, even in the pitch darkness. Alex was coming.
Who has the prisoners? He called.
Lieutenant Gramwell, sir,
someone answered.
No, he doesn't. I just left him.
Henry was feeding him last I knew.
Then where's Henry? Alex said.
He sounded worried. Men called up and down the line for the missing squire. Sage crept around the back of the pile of gear, keeping it between her and the sound of Alex's voice. The searching became more frantic.
A torch, Alex bellowed. I need a torch.
A flame sparked and grew in the direction of the smoldering fire. Someone must have used the embers. A soldier came running with it. She should have taken the cut ropes. Alex would find them as soon as he had light. Sage had to do more to slow down the discovery and chase. She turned and sprinted blindly into the desert, making messy tracks she hoped weren't in the direction the Kazmuni had gone. She ran over and down several dunes until she was out of breath. Then she scaled one last hill, hunched over, digging her fingers into the sand. When she came to the crest, she threw herself over the top and rolled down to the bottom of the other side and lay there, sprawled. It was many long minutes before a glow appeared over the rise, accompanied by shouting. Sage turned her face away and closed her eyes. Hopefully she'd given Derrett and Malamin another 20 minutes while the Norsari tracked her down. Now she'd give them even more time.
Here, I found him.
Men came running down the hill, weapons and torches held high. They spread out, some going over the next rise to set a wide defensive circle around her.
The more footprints disturbing the area, the better. Alex was on his knees next to her, gently rolling her toward him and pulling the scarf away.
Henry, are you all right?
She groaned as she turned to her back, but kept her eyes shut, partly to make him think she was unconscious, and partly because she didn't want to see his face when he recognized her. The hand on her shoulder froze.
Captain, that's Mistress Fowler, a voice gasped. I know who it is.
Alex's hands felt along her neck, head, and shoulders, checking for injuries. Sage moaned and fluttered her eyelids, but kept them closed. He moved down to her arms and her ribs, then lower, until he had checked her whole body.
Bleeding hell, Sage, he muttered. What are you doing here?
No tracks we can follow, Captain,
came a voice, and the bright light of a torch.
But the wind covers everything real quick. We were lucky to find him. Her.
Gather everyone. We're going back.
Alex bent low over her and stroked her cheek.
Can you hear me, Sage? Wake up. Please.
She couldn't help opening her eyes at the note of hysteria in his voice, but the light was too bright, and she shut them again almost immediately. His face was stricken, terrified. Though she would have done it over again, the fullness of her betrayal hit her.
Alex, she mumbled. Sweet spirit, I'm so sorry.
Yes, it's me. I'm taking you back.
He slipped his arms under her shoulders and knees and lifted her up, cradling her against his body. She grabbed his jacket and sobbed into his chest.
Oh, Alex, I'm so sorry.
He held her tightly as he climbed up the dune and began the long walk back to camp.
You're safe now. I've got you. It's all right, Alex whispered.
No, it wasn't. Chapter 43. The sun was several hours above the horizon, and the air stuffy with heat when she woke. Sage pried her eyes open with difficulty. They were swollen and crusted over from crying herself to sleep. She must not have even woke when Alex set her down.
Alex.
Sage lifted her head and looked around, finding him immediately. He sat cross-legged on the other side of the double tent, elbows on his knees and hands folded under his chin, watching her.
Good morning, he said.
His tone was as dead as his face. Alex waited for her to sit up, then nodded to the bowl on the ground beside her. Sage avoided meeting his gaze as she dipped the cloth lying next to it in the warm water. He remained as still as a statue as she wiped grime from her eyes and face. When she finished, Alex tossed a canteen across to her and went back to his silent position. Sage was so thirsty she'd been ready to drink the dingy water left in the dish, and she chugged half the contents of the canteen without taking a breath. Then she cleared her throat and wiped her mouth with the back of her hand and waited for him to speak.
I told you to stay at the training camp, he said flatly.
Yes, you did, she whispered.
You disobeyed a direct order.
Yes, I did.
You almost got yourself killed.
Sage rubbed her nose with her knuckles and sniffed.
Do you understand now, Sage? Do you realize this is not a game?
His voice began to rise. Do you have any idea what could have happened? He was wrong in so many ways, but that didn't change that she'd disobeyed and deceived him. That she'd scared him out of his mind last night. He had every right to be angry. She looked down, fresh tears coming to her eyes.
Alex, I'm
Save it, Sage, he said coldly.
There was a long pause while she studied her hands in her lap.
Guess who else I found with us, he said finally.
Nicholas.
She wondered if he had been discovered or if he'd given himself up.
He swears he acted on his own, Alex continued,
But I find that hard to believe, given how the pair of you worked together to hide for so long. I wonder if the Kazmuni would have abandoned their hostage had it been him.
Alex didn't know she and the prince were responsible for their escape. Yet. His next words were so low she could barely hear them.
Did they hurt you?
She shook her head. No.
Well, thank the spirit for that.
The relief in his voice threatened to break her. Sage took a deep breath to stay in control. Have you found them?
No, they're gone. They took their weapons and your knife.
Alex rose to his feet.
And now that you're awake, we need to leave before their friends come looking for revenge.
He reached for the tent flap. Get your things together. Alex. He stopped and looked back at her. I really am sorry, she said. There were so many emotions in his eyes, she couldn't begin to separate them.
So am I.
Chapter 44. Hazar was ready. The moon was waning, but every day increased the risk of being caught. They couldn't wait for a fully dark night. Just the next time part of the Norsari went on patrol. He would divide his men and attack the group when they were a few miles away from the camp, forcing the rest of the soldiers to come to their assistance and take the prince while he was relatively unguarded. A diplomatic party was traveling down the Jovan Road and was no threat, but it caused a delay when part of the group left the road to visit the Norsari camp. Another company of soldiers was coming south from Tenegal as well, but Hazar suspected they were headed into Tazmit. When the diplomat stayed only a day, and camp activity immediately picked up, indicating a patrol, Hazar told his men to be ready. Quinn himself led the expedition, and it was larger than all the others before. Perfect. It was astonishing how quickly everything fell apart. First, the Damoran prince disappeared. He'd never been known to go on a patrol, but the morning after Quinn left, the boy wasn't seen going to the river as he did every morning and evening. Hazar decided to wait a day, on the off chance the prince had gone along. If so, the Khimasar could attack just them, and it was better to let them get farther away in that case. Then Quinn went into the desert. Hazar wasn't willing to follow him where there was nowhere to hide. Plans changed to attack the regular roaming detachment when it approached instead, but the prince still did not appear. By the third day, Hazar concluded the boy had gone with Quinn. Shit. The delay wasn't a disaster, but the Khimasar were getting anxious. Many grumbled at how the lives they'd built in Damora the past year were preferable to returning home. If Hazar dispersed them temporarily, he wasn't sure he'd get everyone back. Far be it from him to force men who had been otherwise abandoned to return, but it risked exposing them all. Then the army company on the road turned east rather than going through the Jovan Pass. Whether it was on the way to the Norsari camp or following the diplomat didn't matter. It was close enough to change the numbers that were already against the Khimasar. The regular roaming detachment came and went. Dispersing was rapidly becoming the better option. Hazar was 1 hour from giving the order when an observer from the far side of the river came running. Quinn had returned. The roaming squad was still within reach, and the company on the road was at least 2 days out. The prince was spotted among the returning platoon, which looked exhausted. The night would be solidly dark with a new moon. Now. Chapter 45. The Norsari group made it to the river as the sun sank behind the mountains. Sentries from camp met them at the tree line and walked with them to the water, giving Alex a few updates on what had happened in his absence. It was a short list. Colonel Traysden hadn't arrived yet, which gave Alex at least a day to explain everything to his officers,
and pieced together what exactly had happened in the desert. Lieutenant Kasich waited on the riverbank. Alex stepped off the rowboat and wearily returned his friend's salute. Sergeant Carter passed through.